A good friend joins me in the studio, Julie Foudy, former U.S. national team midfielder, and she was a four-time All-American at Stanford, and she went on to play for the U.S. women's national team for 17 years, where she won the soccer gold medal at the Atlanta Games, as well as the Games in Athens, and also a silver medal at the Sydney Games. And she's a two-time Women's World Cup champion, and she's been inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And she's an analyst, reporter, and you see her as a primary color commentator for women's soccer telecasts on ESPN. But more importantly, she has written another book. And this is an outstanding book that I think everyone should read. It's called Choose to Matter, Your Guide to Being Courageously and Fabulously You.
Courageously and fabulously you.
Did you sit around all night with a glass of wine and think that went up?
Exactly. That was the 500th title I gave them as a choice. Courageously and fabulously you. You must say it like that, Ron.
There's got to be some music with it, too. I mean, if we're going to do it, let's do it big time.
That's right. Spouting graphic.
You've heard all the things in the introduction, and I often, when I talk to people that have done a lot in their life and in sports, I always wonder what is the most important thing of everything that I said in introducing you that means the most to you?
That's a great question. Right now, I actually just said this the other day to someone. I'm like, I am more proud of the fact that I am an author over any gold medal, World Cup championship, because I guess I never just, it's always been kind of a bucket list item, but I never thought I would write a book and to finally be called an author. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I am an author. I tell my kids, a very important author.
It's like getting the title doctor.
Right.
Don't call me Dr. Jones. I mean, Jones. Call me Dr. Jones now.
Dr. Jones. Dr. Foudy. Yeah, it was fun. And thankfully, I never wanted to write an autobiography because that white kid from Orange County is not very exciting. from suburban Orange County. But I never wanted to write like a sporty X's and O book. So that's why I think I'm super pumped about this, because it's a life book. Hopefully, I'm gonna get you out of your comfort zone, because I was surrounded by these awesome teammates who helped me do that and be courageous and do things I never thought I could do. And if I can be that voice and I can interview women in the book to help you get there, then I think that's, you know, one of the most important things in my life I've ever done.
One of the things that I have found in talking to people and talking to athletes in particular is the fact that you got to go back to where they grew up, how they grew up, what were the early influences in their lives that really molded them into what they are. Let me ask you that question, because it's a legitimate, I know, white girl from Orange County, but there had to be more to it than just that.
Well, it's interesting, because the catalyst of so much in this book was that I grew up thinking that, you know, leadership was a very linear thing, and it was positional, and it was a narrow definition, and you had to be a president or a politician or a celebrity or someone in a position of power to make a difference. And then as I got older and I got surrounded by these amazing women on the U.S. team, I realized that, gosh, my definition of leadership is so narrow and wrong. It's not, because what I was reading in history books was, you know, a white man or a tall, you know, a guy on a horse with a tall hat and a sword. And I wasn't going to be a general, a five-star general. And I didn't look like, you know, the men I was reading about in history books. So all of a sudden I looked around and realized, wow, leadership is so diverse, and it's different, and it's quiet, and it's loud, it's cerebral, it's emotional, it's all these things, and that you just have to figure out what you are, what is authentically your style, because that's what people want to follow. And that was really an epiphany for me, I think, when I was growing up, to see, you know, a Mia Hamm who hated the spotlight and didn't want to be this, you know, person in the middle of the huddle pounding her chest. That wasn't her. Right. But that's what I thought a leader was. And then I watched her in action and the way she led in such a personal way. And I realized you need all of that for a team to come together or for a group to be successful.
Why soccer? Why did you gravitate in that direction?
I was that hyperactive child that liked to be around people and move. And so those two fit, right? A team sport, lots of running. And it wasn't actually, you know, nowadays it's like, you know, I remember when my kids were, four, you know, 6 years old, and people were like, why don't you have them in soccer yet? They're six. How dare you, as a bad mother, not put them in? They're missing out on quality years. I'm like, they're going to be fine. So it wasn't actually until college that I just focused on soccer. I grew up playing everything, you know, basketball, softball, volleyball, tackle football. But soccer was the one I always kept coming back to. I'd be out on, you know, the front lawn juggling the soccer ball or doing little moves or kicking it against the garage door. And I do think it was that real team element. I was on the same team, the Mighty Soccerettes, for 10 years. And I love that. They were still, to this day, they're some of my best friends.
Tell me about the development of your identity, your personal identity, because when kids are growing up, they have to deal with a lot of things they're not prepared to deal with, and we hear a lot about bullying and everything, but for a woman in particular, finding that identity is really a challenge.
Yes, that's chapter 9, Ron. Awkward is awesome, because that was totally me. And really, I mean, I joke about it now, but in high school, I had short hair that was so crazy thick that I was convinced it would grow up and defy gravity. Right? It would actually grow into the air 5 feet. So I didn't want to grow out my hair because I didn't want hair growing up 5 feet. So I wore these big hoop earrings so people knew I was a girl because everyone, my friends called me Jimmy, my brother's friends. They all call me Jimmy. I looked like a little boy because I was always in my soccer gear. I had a concave chest, so that never helps. And so I think that if I could have learned earlier that it's going to be okay. You're going to get through this phase. It's going to be awkward, but awkward is what, you know, helps you grow when you stumble. But it wasn't until, you know, probably in my 20s that I started to actually embrace awkward and celebrate that, you know what? Yes, I am awkward, and that's okay because it's different, and let's celebrate different, and that's a great thing.
What was the aha moment for you?
I don't know if I had one. I think I just realized I finally got the confidence in my 20s post college to be like, who cares, right? Why am I worrying about this stuff? Who cares? And I think probably that coincided with, you know, being surrounded by these really strong women, you know, on my different various teams, whether it was my Stanford soccer team or the national team, that started to just live as they wanted to live.
So soccer was your comfort zone?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Who in that group, that early group, did you really assimilate a little bit from?
Well, Mia, you know, to this day is still a dear friend. The other captain on the team, our captain for many years, Carla Overbeck, who is just this incredible human being who led with this wonderful tone. You know, coaches are always telling, you know, athletes, you need to be more vocal. You need to speak up more. And then you get the kid that, you know, everyone wants to put on earmuffs because they can't handle how much they're talking and the way they're talking or the negativity in which they're talking. And yet Carla had this incredible ability to light a fire under you or motivate you in a special way. And then Christine Lilly was another one. She was one of those players that, you know, you wanted to clone them because they just, every time they came in, they were fit. And it was never about her. Everything she did was understated. And yet she was so consistently great. Brandi Chastain, who was this energizer bunny. and you just love the contagious energy she brought to everything. And so I was constantly around these different types, too, because Christine Lilly was very quiet. Mia, quiet. Brandi, you know, so effusive and gregarious. And watching them and learning from them was, I feel like, such a gift in my life.
When it came to the soccer, I always ask athletes, because I'm interested in, when was that moment you knew you could play at the next level, that you really thought you were good enough to be able to do that? And I know when it comes to baseball pitchers, question I always am fascinated with the answer is, when did you become a pitcher instead of a thrower?
Right.
Because there is a difference between
right.
the two.
Yeah, interesting. I would say my 10th year on the national team is when I realized I could play at this level. It took me 10 years of actually being on the national team where I was like, okay, yeah, I belong. I can do this.
Did you ever have any self-doubt?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
How did you
deal
with
it? I talk a lot about that in the book, about it, you know, strategies to get out of that feeling of discomfort and being okay with it. And once you're okay with it, I mean, one of the things this woman in the book, Dr. Colleen Hacker, tells me about a lot is, you know, I used to say to her, Colleen, I have these, she worked with our national team for many years, I have these terrible butterflies and I don't like them because I get into a game and I'm doubting myself and then I just go into this downward spiral. And she said one of the most transformational things, she said, butterflies are a great thing. And I said, why? No, they're not. Why do you say that? And she said, because they mean you care. You're invested. You emotionally are into that. And that is a great thing. Never wish for the butterflies to leave. She said, now just teach them to fly in formation. And I was like, ah, how do you do that? So in the book, we give a ton of different strategies. And I actually wore this hairband where I'd snap it. During a game, it was like a physical motion to snap me out of it. And then once I learned that, it's amazing how quickly my confidence then followed. It really did work.
Very fascinating conversation with a very talented woman, but a very interesting woman as well. And again, I want you to check out this book. It's called Choose to Matter, Your Guide to Being Courageously and fabulously you. We'll talk more about her career. We'll talk more about this book. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show. Julie Foudy has joined us here on Sports Byline. If you know anything about soccer, anything about sports, anything about women's athletics, then you certainly know that name, former U.S. national team midfielder. One of the things I've always interested in is leadership and also, I guess, the cohesiveness of a team. Every time I'm in spring training, invariably the media will ask, well, where's the leadership going to come on this team?
Right.
And I'm sure you've heard that a lot of times as well. And what makes it fascinating about the time that you played, the teams that you played on, the athletes that you had is there. You can't be successful unless you've got a strong ego. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering how you blend those egos into a team situation, because everybody thinks my way of doing it is the best way.
Right. And you want that ego, right? Because it makes the team better. So I never am a fan of tapping down the ego in terms of that competitive drive, which I think people go, wait, but you always talk about team chemistry. I'm like, yeah, you need both, right? But at the end of the day, the we has to be greater than the me. Right. And so we had egos on the team, and we had personalities, big personalities and competitiveness. And that's what drives the team to be so good. But at the end of the day, when I look back over the teams that won Olympics, won World Cups, the common denominator without fail is always that down to the 20th player, the last player on the bench or the last player on the roster, that person got that the we was greater than the me.
Yeah, they cared about the team more than they did their individual self.
Even if they're, you know, they want to be on the field. But I look down and I always tell kids, look at footage of us when we score in the 99 World Cup and look at the bench. They'll flash to the bench and you'll notice that every single player is up cheering and going crazy. Not just like, hey, that's awesome. They are going crazy because they really were into it. They were celebrating. We were celebrating each other. It was about the team doing well. Yeah, they wanted to be out there, but the team had to do well.
You played in a lot of matches, and when I talk to golfers, and I'll ask them the difference between a stop on the PGA Tour or a woman on the LPGA Tour, mm-hmm. but the difference between that and the British Open, mm-hmm. the Masters. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you the same question. The difference between a typical match and World Cup match, also Olympic match as well. What are the dynamics that are different from just a regular match?
Yeah. Oh, it's what you live for. You know, by the end of my career, I was like, if I'm not playing a World Cup or an Olympic match, then I'm not interested. It was terrible. It's like, I'm done. That's when I knew. I was like, I'm done. I only want Olympics from here on out. Everything else I'm not interested in. It's funny because a dear friend of ours, Ron Billie Jean King, who said to me before the 99 World Cup, I must have been saying to her, and Billy, as you know, became a huge mentor for our national team. And she, I must've been saying before the 99 World Cup, gosh, there's so much pressure because we're playing in these huge stadiums and we've promised that we're going to fill them up and that people are going to come and we don't know. And then what happens if we don't win? Cause then people aren't going to come and we're worried about that. And she looked at me and she goes, Foudy, pressure is a privilege. in her Billie Jean King roar, right? I was like, you're right, it is a privilege. What am I saying? This is great. She's like, you've done the work. Go out there and enjoy it. Embrace it. Pressure is a privilege. And that became our mantra for the entire 99 World Cup. We'd roar, pressure is a privilege. People would kill to be in the spot. Enjoy it.
I'll tell you a funny story about her. I was doing a senior event out in Hawaii. And she had it was a doubles event. She was one of the doubles players. And the other one, I can't recall who it was. But Billie Jean called her off of a lob. And she hit it. And, of course, in Hawaii, you know, the wind and everything. And she hit it. And on the fly, it hit the fence at the end of the court. And her partner dropped her racket and said, you know, I could have done that, too. And, I mean, it was just the funniest thing. The other one was Rosie Casals. Well, we're in Detroit, and, again, Billie Jean was up there, and she was playing doubles with Rosie Casals against it was a kind of an exhibition against two men's play. Yeah. And John Alexander from Australia hits the ball, or no, Billie Jean hit the ball, and it went right between John Alexander's legs, and he looked down, pulled his shorts out a little bit, and you heard Rosie say, "John, if it's not hurt, don't worry about it.
Carry on, John." Rosie, she's a gem too.
Yeah, when you think about the big events that you did play in, each one I'm sure was different from a personality standpoint, from a competitive standpoint mm-hmm. as well. What are the ones that really you never will ever forget? Those moments.
Yeah. You know, I used to think like, oh gosh, that's the best one I'm ever going to play in for a World Cup. And then I'd get to the next Olympics. And I'd be like, oh, this one was better. So they continually got better. And especially, you know, the Olympics are so different. You know, the three Olympics I played in, you know, I didn't realize in our very first Olympics when women's soccer, the very first time women's soccer was ever in the Olympics was in 96. And we're here in the States. And we didn't realize it because we'd never been to Olympics. What a gift that is to be playing in your home country for the first ever women's soccer event. And then we go and win it in front of, you know, 80,000 out in Athens, Georgia that year. And I never thought we could top that. And then what's next? The 99 World Cup, where, you know, we win it at the Rose Bowl and Brandy gets naked in front of 90,000, you know, and no one thought we could do that. And then our last Olympics in Greece, in Athens, you know, we're playing Brazil. And we knew Mia and I were retiring, and the team knew, like, this Joy Fawcett was retiring. We knew, like, this was our last run. And I had said to my husband, if we don't win this, then I'm going to apologize right now because you're going to be married to a woman that you're not going to want to be with for the next 40 years of your life. I can't even say the word I used, but it was the B word. And you do not want to be around this woman if we do not win this. And really, we played a game we probably shouldn't have beat Brazil in the 2004 final, and then we go on and win it, you know, with the Abby Wambach header. So I kiss Abby's forehead all the time to this day. But that, you know, each one you go, gosh, it was so different and special in its own way. But there is something really magical to the Olympics. And to be able to play in three is just so, I feel so blessed.
You know about the spontaneity of 99, of course, with what Brandy did. And I just wonder, in retrospect, does everybody feel unanimously that it was something that should have happened, was good to happen? I know it wasn't planned, per se.
I will say, Ron, at the moment, I was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to answer this question now for the rest of my life. Brandy, put your top on, sister. Because, you know, at the moment, everyone was like, oh, you're just popular because, you know, you guys are attractive, or, you know, they had a million reasons. You're good looking, or you're, you know, you're like the next door neighbor that. And I was like, no, we're probably popular because we're winning. We're damn good is why we're popular. And it helps that we're humble and normal and not paid $1 million each. But no, I mean, the thing is, as you know, right, in soccer, you celebrate. And Brandy was one of those like soccer nerds, right? She grew up watching every game. In men's soccer, they ripped the jersey off when they celebrate. And they used to twirl it around their head. And that was kind of a soccer celebration. So for her, you know, and she still says it today, it was just so instinctive. That's like what you did. You know, as a kid, you like rip your jersey off. So, no, I love that image. And thank God it wasn't me with my love handles on the front of, you know, a bunch of magazines.
Let me ask you about 96, because out of the 96 World Cup, it was believed that that was going to be the launching pad for women's soccer in this country.
Right.
And it didn't happen. And I don't know why it didn't happen.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. It was just talking about this the other day with Mike and Mike, that you know, it's especially because the images you get from that, right? 90,000, and it's, you know, it took over the country for the summer. And I thought, gosh, this is going to be the catalyst that's needed, not just in women's sports, but specifically in women's soccer, because the challenge we have in women's soccer is we have so many girls playing in the States, but globally still to this day, it's very unusual for women's programs to be supported by their countries. It's a man's sport, and it should be for men, and we're not going to support our women playing. And so I thought, oh, this will transform the world. And still to this day, I can count on two hands the amount of countries that support their women's program appropriately or well. And so that has been frustrating. I mean, I think it was good for this country to show the potential, but the fact that it happened so slowly and is still happening so slowly, I agree, is very frustrating.
We've got about a minute left before we have to break again. And When I think about where women's soccer is today, I still don't understand why it hasn't grown. I know you gave some insight with that answer, but is there anything that can be done about the women's game that can increase the popularity of it?
Globally, I mean, the nice thing is here, you know, this team is so popular, and
right.
we're seeing you know, a great amount of interest, even in non-World Cup years and Olympic years, and that's encouraging. But globally, I think, is really the challenge. And you still have a lot of countries where, you know, they just, you know, and whether it's a, I don't think it's even a conscious bias. It's more a, well, this is how we've always been, right? Culturally, we're, you know, men play, not women. But the reason I have always advocated for it is, we know, you know, sports transforms communities. If you can get girls playing from a young age, I think your community is a stronger place. And that's where, why I've always been an advocate of Title IX. And as much as we can get other countries thinking that way as well, I think just the world's a better place.
Yeah, and about 20 seconds. I also think it's because men are fearful that they're going to lose control in the certain cultures. I'm going to be honest with you, having gone to the Middle East.
Yeah, that they're fearful of strong women.
Yep.
Because that's what sports create, you know, not just physically, but I think it gives you a foundation for being a strong human being in life, which is what I love.
And self-confidence as well. We're going to talk about this wonderful book in our next segment. It's called Choose to Matter, Your Guide to Being Courageously and Fabulously You. And again, I want to urge everyone to check out this book, because there are some, and you're going to hear some of the stories of the people that are in this book. Julie Foudy with us in the studio, again, a former U.S. national team midfielder, and won 2 gold medals at the Olympics. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline. Good to see Julie. It's been a long time since we've seen each other. When she was with me the last time, it was with her book about leadership, and now she's got a new book out called Choose to Matter, Your Guide to Being Courageously and Fabulously You. I'm going to read from the handout that they gave me, is that Choose to Matter is for the teenage girl starting her journey, or for the woman at a critical fork in her journey. It's for everyone and anyone who needs a little push to find courage, motivation, and confidence. When you thought about developing this book and what you wanted to put into it, what was the philosophy you had, Julie?
The philosophy was actually, I pitched it to Disney Publishing, and I said, listen, leadership is a heavy topic for girls. And the reason it drives me crazy with girls is we, as I found doing these leadership academies for so many years, is young women, and I'm just not talking young women, older women as well, we're really good at underselling ourselves, right? We want to check every box before we raise our hand. And it's what I love most about women, in that we are over-disciplined and we are super prepared, but it's what sets us back so often, is we wait until every box is checked and we're perfect before we're like, yes, okay, now I will do it. It's like, no, the opportunity is gone. Raise your hand. Raise it now. Just get out of that comfort zone. And so I said to Disney Publishing, I said, you know, I want it to be about leadership and getting out of your comfort zone. But it also, because it's kind of a heavy topic for a lot of young girls, I want it to be fun and I want it to be joyful and there's laughter and it's playful. So the real thing that I'm most proud of is the messaging is, go on, sister, you can do it. And being that voice to nudge you out of your comfort zone. But it's also interactive, and there's silly exercises, and there's team building things you can do in it, and there's reflection. I wanted it to kind of be a handbook that you could go to different chapters and say, I'm struggling with this, you know, here's some strategies from these amazing women I interview in the book that will help you get there. So it's real tangible stuff they can then, I hope, utilize in their lives.
You know, it's interesting, having known a lot of strong women, including my aunt and my mother, as well, who were strong women. And I made the comment to you, I came to appreciate them and respect them. I didn't fear them. And that's not something that generally is the case. I think men are fearful, as we've talked already about strong women. But what do they do to overcome those things? I mean, they have to deal with it every day. It's like a person of color having to deal with the frustrations as well.
Exactly.
So what do you do?
Well, there's the first point is that you can't, as Sue Enquist, who's an 11-time national championship coach from UCLA in softball, says, her quote is, you can't get stuck in your junk, right? That there are going to be obstacles in life. There's going to be things thrown at you. You're going to fail a test. You're going to get cut from a team, right? How you react in those moments, because everyone has them. Someone's going to tell you, as they told us for years, like, stop being so crazy to dream that the women should have a World Cup. Stop being so crazy to dream the women should be in the Olympics for soccer. And we finally realized that, hey, we're not crazy. We're just courageous. And if you can build that team around you to give you that push to say, because you're going to have moments of self-doubt. We all do. But then what do you do about it? And what is your dream team around you helping you get out of that uncomfortable space and being comfortable in uncomfortable? Because how many of us have had friends who we say, hey, we got this. I have this awesome dream. Hey, what do you think about this? And that friend's like, that's stupid. Where are you from? Why do you think you could do that? Instead of a friend who's like, that's awesome. Go for it. Because you can. And that's the voice I wanted this book to be.
Along those lines, the reason why this network exists today is because I was asked when I had Duke Snider on the local show in San Francisco, a caller called and said, do you know, Ron, I've waited 35 years to talk to Duke Snider, and tonight you're giving me the chance. And that was the seed for saying that's what fans want to do. They want to be able to talk to their heroes. And so I'm doing a tennis tournament. Billie Jean is my color analyst on the thing. And during one of the breaks or afterwards, I said, hey, Billie Jean, I've got this idea, but I'm not a businessman. I've never done this before. Yeah. I'm talent on the air, and I don't know whether to do it. She said to me, Ron, I know you well enough. You never want to look over your shoulder and wonder if you could have.
Right.
And that was the seat. I'm getting goosebumps.
She pushed you out. She gave you the nudge.
She absolutely did. Because she and other women like her, yourself and others in this book, they don't look at it as failure.
No.
Because you learn from every experience that you have.
Yeah. And I think the misconception, too, is that you have to be a celebrity or a person in a position of power or an Olympic gold medalist. And so in the book, we do have the examples of, you know, the Billie Jeans and the Robin Roberts and people, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, CEO of Facebook, writer of Lean In. But we also have anonymous people who just care so deeply about something or have a group around them that nudge them on, that do these incredibly courageous things. And that you don't need to be in that position of power to make a difference. That leadership is personal, not positional.
In all those women, what is the one commonality?
That they'll fall straight on their face, fall flat on their face, laugh, right? Laugh and go, well, that didn't work. Let's try again. Let's get up and go again. Not afraid to fail. That, you know, I call it, my chapter is, it's called the F word, right? And there's actually a chapter in the book. It's all about failure. That F word, I say, yes, failure. You know, make it your best friend, because those who embrace it and love it and are willing to grow and say, you know what, that's going to be okay. I'm going to fail. And you realize, like, you know what, this is life. Everyone fails. I'm going to be okay. And sometimes you just need that reminder.
Share with me some of your favorite stories from some of these people in this book.
One of the women I interview in the book, to the point of you don't have to be a celebrity or, you know, a person in a position of power to lead, is my dear friend Amy Liss, who was born with cerebral palsy. She was born a twin, and she has never had any independent function of her legs or arms, so always been confined to a wheelchair, can't eat on her own, can't bathe on her own, she can't walk, of course. And yet, when I met Amy about 15 years ago, I was blown away because she was one of the most positive, courageous women I had ever met. She always found positive in something. You know, she found positive in, you know, showing our Leadership Academy kids, you know, her facility at Easter Seals. And she's smiling and joking, and she has this great sense of humor. But because she's in a wheelchair and she has a really intense form of cerebral palsy, people kind of back off. They don't want to approach her. Yet when they hear her talk and they hear how smart and funny she is and positive, then people are drawn to her. She has this gift in life. And so I put her in this book, and she has been one of the most transformational people in my life. Above her bed, she has this quote that says, live each day with an attitude of gratitude. And here's a person who has every right to probably be complaining throughout a little bit of the day that, you know, I'd like to run and jump and feel the wind as I'm running, and she can't, yet she never complains. And I just love that.
One of the people that I have a particular affinity for is Robin Roberts, because I've known her for a very long time, and her father was a Tuskegee Airman. And so we had that connection as well. And I even had a crush on her at one time.
Who doesn't have a crush on Robin, right?
Exactly.
You're not alone, Ron. She's such a gem. I mean, she talks in the book openly about, you know, being faced with cancer, not once, but twice. I mean, and that she said literally the second time when I found out, I got a little angry. And I said, yeah, I bet. She goes, because I'd done everything right the first time, I felt like. And I'd lived my life in such a good way, like healthy and active. And here I am going through this a second time. And she shares her strategies of how to get out of that place of negativity and turn it into a positive and being able to flip it and working on mentally being able to flip it so that she could get in a good place to fight it.
Also, another great story, I'm sure, came from Sheryl Sandberg as well after the
tragedy. Lean In. And and her, she talks about her husband losing Dave. And you know, the thing about that, and as her book, which is already a bestseller, Option B, talks about as well, is this, it's raw. It's real. It's her saying, look, I was in such a bad place that I didn't know how I was going to go back to work. She's sharing with this with me. And you think, Sheryl Sandberg, you know, billionaire number 7 on the world's most powerful women list above Oprah, Queen Elizabeth. And here she is talking about, I don't know how I'm going back to work. And she said, I needed to share how I got through it.
I've always had the idea and belief, and correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, but because of athletes and their focus, their discipline and everything, that when they have to deal with tragedy or have to deal with a challenge, that they're probably better prepared to deal with it because being a highly skilled athlete. Am I correct in that observation?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I'm always pushing kids to play, right? And young girls, like, play something. I don't care what you play, but play. Play it competitively.
Be involved.
Yeah, you don't have to learn that at the highest level. You don't have to go to an Olympics to learn that, right? You learn that adversity and setback and loss is part of life, right? And I'm losing on the field or I'm losing in this game and I'm going to, okay, that feeling, I don't like it at all. How am I going to make sure it doesn't happen again? And how am I going to learn and extract the lesson and all these things by playing sports at any level, I think teaches you. It's the gift, really, of sports.
One of the things I'm interested in with your Leadership Academy, also with this book, when the team went on that tour after one of the major championships and everything, when you look into a woman or a girl's face, can you tell if you've connected with them?
Oh, absolutely.
What is it? What's the giveaway?
Yeah, tears. I bring people to tears all the time, Ron. It's a terrible trait I have.
You and Oprah?
No, it's that, you know, it's that smile in with the Leadership Academies, you know, you really have this transformational experience of I'm connecting because I'm sharing a story that's relatable. Maybe it's a message they've heard from their parents or teachers or coaches a million times. But the fact that you're telling me that Mia was super quiet and awkward and shy and hated attention is me. That's what they're saying to themselves. That's me. I see it in that person. So if you share enough examples of here's what these people did, here's where they come from, and that's probably you too, right? And they're like, yes, I don't have to be that person. I can be quiet and shy and still be an effective leader. Then it's this epiphany for them. And it really is a transformational experience to learn that I can make a difference. I just have to care enough to raise my hand.
What do you want people to take away from the book?
That they can. That they can choose to matter. The real takeaway isn't just that I want you to be empowered to be a better person. I go into a whole section in the book about I want you to be empowered to then go empower others. To me, that's leadership. You go empower others to be great. And so there's a whole service component in it, and it's not that I'm asking them to change the world in a day. I give them a week to do that, but that I want them to now go and help someone else. I want you to go play it forward. I want you to go, I call it turn when you turn and pull. So go pull someone forward with you. And you can do that at any age, right, in any position. And that is the most empowering thing is when you realize you have the power to empower others in a positive way. And wouldn't that be great if everyone was doing these little small acts in all these communities around the world? And that's what the book inspired.
I see that you and I have a common weakness. We both love donuts.
Yeah. Oh,
Krispy Kreme.
Ron, it's bad.
It's bad.
I have a problem. Have you admitted it yet?
That
you have a problem?
Because
that's the
yet.
First step.
But I'm being pushed by my friends. Yeah.
I actually was driving in today.
There's going to be a confrontation.
I was driving in today with Maz. And I was like, oh, Maz, I'm having one of those moments. She's like, what? I was like, I need a donut. And when I need a donut, it's bad. Let's go.
Now, Krispy Kreme, your favorite? Or
no, actually, I was telling her today, I do like Krispy Kreme, but I love like the big, thick cinnamon rolls that are bigger than my head and like gooey and thick. Oh, from anywhere. Yeah. Bigger the better.
Yeah, I'm going to wean myself off of them because the
sugar.
Don't
do that.
Well,
do not do that, Ron.
What do you recommend,
no,
doctor?
No, you just go. They're good for the soul. You go with it.
If I die, I'm going to have a smile on my
face.
Yes, right?
Exactly. It's all balanced. Have a banana with it.
We only have about 90 seconds left. I know you have two wonderful children, and I'm just wondering the parenting experience that you've had.
Oh, gosh.
Did you have to adapt? Was it a little bit hard for you to do it since you were kind of so well-focused on what you've accomplished in your life?
Oh, I mean, I think like any parent, you're like, what am I doing here? I don't know. How do we feed them? How do we keep them alive? But now they're at 8 and 10. And as I was telling you, I want to create an app that freezes them right at this age because they're perfect. They like to hang with mom.
They still need you.
Yes, they still need me, yet they're self-sufficient. Ah, it's a great age.
What's the craziest question either one of them have ever asked you?
When they started, people started asking for autographs around them, and they're like, and they'd never seen me play, right, because I stopped playing. They're like, why are people asking for you to sign things, Mom? And now I can say, because I'm a very important author. Of course. Duh.
Briefly, what's career day at the school like for you and them?
Yeah, bring your medals. No, I'm just going to bring books. I'm more proud of that.
You know, we've known each other for a very long time. I remember when you came in when you were down at Stanford as well.
Yeah.
You've been a friend, and that's not based on the number of times we see each other. It's the quality of the time that we have spent together.
You're a great man, Ron. Thanks for doing this for so long and doing it so well.
Well,
it's an honor to be on your show again.
Well, you deserve it, and I'm really happy. And again, I want to urge people, we're going to make it a selection of the month. This is an outstanding book, and particularly girls and women overall. It's called, again, Choose to Matter, Your Guide to Being
Courageously and Fabulously You.
Julie Foudy with us again, outstanding national team player for the U.S. women's soccer team. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.